I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like our friends at Madison Computer Works, S&R Remodeling, and St. Vincent de Paul. John Nichols from the Capital Times with us. John, let's jump right into this. John Kelly went out and tried to clean up the mess that the president had made, and it appears as though he made it worse because he kept talking. Had he just given a short statement explaining why the president said what he said, he would have been fine, but for some reason, he felt it was necessary to keep going. Here's John Kelly.
In April of 2015, I was still on active duty, and I went to the dedication of the new FBI field office in Miami. And it was dedicated to two men who were killed in a firefight in Miami against drug traffickers in 1986, a guy by the name of Grogan in Duke. Grogan almost retired, 53 years old, Duke, I think less than a year on the job. Anyways, they got in a gunfight and they were killed. Three other FBI agents were there, were wounded, now retired. So we go down, Jim Comey, get an absolutely brilliant memorial speech to those fallen men and to all of the men and women of the FBI who serve our country so well and law enforcement so well. There were family members there. Some of the children that were there were only 3 or 4 years old when their dads were killed on that street in Miami-Dade. Three of the men that survived the fight were there and gave a rendition of how brave those men were and how they gave their lives. And a congresswoman stood up, and in the long tradition of empty barrels making the most noise, stood up there and all of that and talked about how she was instrumental in getting the funding for that building and how she took care of her constituents because she got the money, and she just called up President Obama, and on that phone call he gave the money, the $20 million to build a building. And she sat down and we were stunned that she'd done it, even for someone that is that empty a barrel. We were stunned. But you know, none of us went to the press and criticized. None of us stood up and were appalled. We just said, okay, fine. So I still hope, as you write your stories, and I appeal to America, that let's not let this maybe last thing that's held sacred in our society, a young man, young woman going out and giving his or her life for our country. Let's try to somehow keep that sacred. But it eroded a great deal yesterday by the selfish behavior of a member of Congress.
Okay. How many factual errors are in that little soliloquy there, John?
Well, I don't know that they've created a number that high yet. I think, you know, it's in mathematics.
Can you speak up just a little bit, John?
I don't know that they've got a number that high yet. In mathematics, they're trying to, you know, calculate out the biggest number. But it's up there. Look, here's where the problem is with it. Right off the bat, he didn't remember the first names of the guys he was going to do this big speech about. Did you notice that?
Yes.
Dugan.
And he got the last name wrong on one of them.
Yeah, I know. It was like shameful right off the bat. What a inept, what a
And of course, when the funding was made for the building, she wasn't in Congress.
That's right. But this is where it gets really shameful. She was, when the incident occurred, she was in Miami, right? She was in that region. And people, I don't know that Kelly even knows this. He does not seem to be very informed. But she was an educator in the area, and she was really in the midst of a great struggle to assure that her students, and in particular young African-American men, didn't get drawn into what at that time was a very stylized, you know, very glamorized drug trade. Remember, this is the time of Miami Vice and all that. And she set out in that period to assure that there was funding, resources, support for young men in particular, but also for everybody, but for young men in particular, to find other paths, you know, to become police officers, to become firefighters, to join the military. She was actually somebody who was for decades on the right side of the struggle and on the right side of the issues that General Kelly seemed to be trying to talk about. So right off the bat, he got the basic premise, and sometimes we don't talk about this. We get real focused on this fact, that fact. He got the basic premise wrong. He was attacking the person he should have been celebrating. Now, then you go into the facts themselves.
Right.
Of course, she didn't say what he said, she said. And also, instead of people being stunned, if you look at the tape, she was being applauded.
She got a standing ovation.
And this, just imagine this. He said, well, we decided we weren't going to go to the press. We just let it be. You realize that if you'd gone to the press and complained, you would have been laughed out of the room.
Well, as a matter of fact, then FBI Director James Comey applauded her.
Of course.
He made public statements saying it was terrific. Let me play Representative Federica Wilson's remarks.
You know what? I will be presenting a bill, a copy of the bill that was signed into law to the FBI, and also the pens that the president used to sign that hallowed document. It is a miracle, to say the least, but it speaks to the respect that our Congress has for the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The men and women who put their lives on the line every single day. And today we're providing a boost to our nation by naming this fantastic building in honor of Special Agents Benjamin B. Grogan and Jerry L. Dove, who died valiantly on Friday, April 11th, and what is still considered the bloodiest gun battle in the storied history of the FBI. Most men and women in law enforcement leave their homes for work knowing that there is a possibility they may not return. Will all men and women and first responders who work in law enforcement stand up? Stand up now so that we can applaud you and what you do. Stand up. We are proud of you. We're proud of your courage. Thank you. We're seriously injured. So today, it is our patriotic duty to lift up Special Agent Benjamin Grogan and Special Agent Jerry Dove from the street in South Florida and place their names and pictures high where the world will know that we are proud of their sacrifice, the sacrifice for our nation. It is only fitting that their names should be placed on the same mantle with the letters FBI, because Special Agents Grogan and Dove embody the sacred motto for which the agency has become known. Please repeat it after me. Fidelity.
Fidelity.
bravery, and integrity. God bless you, God bless the FBI, and God bless America. Thank you.
Yeah, that was really self-centered, wasn't it?
You heard the teacher there, right?
Yes. You read my mind. Yes, I heard the teacher there.
This is incredible. This is why this woman, A, she's so confident in this now being bitterly attacked by right-wing media, the president, and this Kelly character. She knows who she is. She's lived it. She's been a part of this community. I don't know if you know, I lived down in South Florida in the late 80s.
Well, good incredible. Thing I didn't.
Better for your absence. But it was an incredibly rough time. But these were still communities. These were areas that were struggling to define themselves. And actually, a lot of them came out of it surprisingly well after all the trauma. One of the reasons they did is because of people like Frederica Wilson. And that teaching moment there, you know, when she asked all these law enforcement people to stand, I will guarantee you some of those who stood are people whose, many of those who stood are people whose lives she had personally touched. And for Kelly to come as an outsider, somebody who doesn't know the storyline, doesn't know the history, doesn't know the names of the people he's talking about, and to attack her because she isn't a lockstep follower of Donald Trump is, you know, it does her no harm. I mean, maybe with some right-wing folks and stuff like that. But the harm that he did to his own reputation and that he did to the president is long-term.
And of course,
I've said for a long time, the biggest problem with General Kelly is that he is loyal to a fault. And that's a key term there, is to a fault. He is so loyal to Donald Trump. He is such a yes man to Donald Trump that he takes his own responsible and honorable record, even though I may disagree with him on some issues. I mean, certainly this man has given a lot to his country, and he diminishes it. He harms his own name and that of the president he's trying to help.
You know, I'm sorry, his recollection of that story and the fact that he gratuitously added it to something where he should have finished, other than his explanation of why the president said what he said, I'm sorry, there's something wrong with him. That tells me that he was watching that through a lens where, frankly, you have to wonder whether there's some maybe unrecognized bias.
Well, I don't know that. What I do know is this. I wonder if he even remembered it at all. Or if, you know, they were searching. I wonder if that was just a random recollection, or if they were, you know, looking for some way to attack her. He's searching his mind for some vague memory of how he might attack her, right? And whatever it was, whether he was prepared to say that and, you know, intentionally went down that road, or whether it was just as best he could remember, the bottom line is that for partisan political purposes, he sought to deceive the people of the United States.
Here is Sarah Huckabee Sanders later in the day.
Does General Kelly still stand by the statement that he made yesterday, that he felt that she was grandstanding and that she was taking credit?
Absolutely. General Kelly said he was stunned that Representative Wilson made comments at a building dedication honoring slain FBI agents about her own actions in Congress, including lobbying former President Obama on legislation. As General Kelly pointed out, if you're able to make a sacred act like honoring American heroes all about yourself, you're an empty barrel. If you don't understand that reference, I'll put it a little more simply. As we say in the South, all hat, no cattle.
Yeah. Well, in fact, have you seen the speech?
I have.
And then you know that most of it was her effusively praising these FBI agents. And when she was talking about what she did in Congress, she was not talking about getting security of $20 million. She was talking about naming the building
she
for
was
these
also
FBI
talking
agents,
about that.
Who she then went on to effusively praise.
She was
and
also,
that was the bulk of the speech.
She also mentioned that, and she also had quite a few comments that day that weren't part of that speech and weren't part of that video that were also witnessed by many people that were there. What General Kelly referenced yesterday.
Tell us specifically, because
exactly what he said. There was a lot of grandstanding. He was stunned that she had taken that opportunity to make it about herself.
Can he come out here and talk to us about this at some point?
I think he's addressed that pretty thoroughly yesterday.
Oh, he was wrong yesterday in talking about getting the money. The money was secured.
If you want to go after General Kelly, that's up to you. But I think that if you want to get into a debate with a four-star Marine general, I think that that's something highly inappropriate.
That's pretty remarkable.
Well,
even by Huckabee Sanders standards.
Yeah, and those are very low standards. But let's point out the most remarkable.
Can you speak up, please, John?
Let's point out the most remarkable thing. It's buried in there. Where she said, she basically acknowledged that they've been caught in a lie, right? She said, yeah, but there were a number of other statements she made and things she said that day that were witnessed by many people.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like Trump.
Now, here's the interesting thing. You just played the Kelly tape where everything he said was describing her speech, right?
Right.
He closed off, and then she sat down, and we were stunned.
Right. Right?
That's what Kelly said. And so Kelly was very, whether you like him or not, whether you disagree with him or not, he was being very, very specific
right.
about what he was talking about. She then got up there and compounded the lie. By saying, oh, yeah, yeah, okay, you caught us here, but there were other things said. Well, that's not what Kelly was talking about.
All right, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation with us at SliesOffice.com.
SliesOffice.com is brought to you by St. Vincent de Paul. The food pantry that they have helps people who have jobs but literally can't make enough money to get by or get assistance. Every month, whether it be a car repair, an unscheduled medical bill, or some other type of thing can throw people who work hard into some very difficult spots. So when you help St. Vincent de Paul, you help feed working people. St. Vincent de Paul in Dane County.
Jeff's Guitar Clinic is a multifaceted shop, offering guitars, amplifiers, and all accessories, guitar lessons for all ages, and instrument repair of the highest quality. Take the scenic drive to beautiful Fort Atkinson and see what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call Jeff's Guitar Clinic today at 920-723-1733. That's Jeff's Guitar Clinic at 920-723-1733. Jeff'sGuitar.com.
You're listening to SliesOffice.com, another podcast with John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. John, I've been saving stuff because we haven't talked for a few days. I've been saving stuff that is just hilarious. The other day, Mika Brzezinski had Senator Cassidy from Louisiana on, and she asked him a question that was pretty specific. I like specific questions, and you're going to love this response.
I'm sorry.
So hold on a second.
Senator, is it fair to say the president has not told the truth at times on any level, on anything? I'm not trying to get into his head. You've gone on this show a lot. I'm trying to get into yours and understand exactly where you're coming from. Has this president ever lied?
This president speaks in hyperbole, and hyperbole is interpreted by some as lies, and by the president it's interpreted as just his exaggeration. The most beautiful in the world. Well, what's the most beautiful in the world? That's in the eye of the beholder. So the president has a manner of speaking which is easily taken as a lie, and the president would refute that. I frankly don't focus on that, Micah. I kind of look at the issue before us, what is the core, and if I get distracted by, well, is the hyperbole a lie or is it not a lie?
How about I've called them all?
We got it. Senator
I'm
Bill
sorry?
Cassidy, I understand completely. Thank you very much.
So, Micah,
I know, you can't pronounce her name.
Yeah.
But,
so, Micah, by the way, the look on her face as he was babbling that was pretty funny.
Well, the thing was, I mean, this is incredible, really. I mean, it's incredible that Cassidy knows the word hyperbole. That's impressive. But, you know, hyperbole is exaggeration, as he suggested there. I understand that some people can debate about whether that's a lie. If I say to you, Sly, you look the best I've ever seen you, I think we can expect that there's a little hyperbole in that, right? Because
no, John, that's a lie.
Well, no, it's hyperbole. I'm trying to make you feel good. I'm trying to, you know, I mean, that's just, you know how it is. And I think that's quite common. But it can become a lie. It doesn't become a lie when you say this is the most beautiful building I've ever seen. That's opinion. You're entitled to some hyperbole. It becomes a lie when you say something that's false, right? When you're not exaggerating. That's not the problem with Trump. It's not his, you know, effusive praise and stuff. It's when he says things that are untrue. For instance, from the beginning of his presidency, when he has claimed that he would have won the popular vote if not for vote fraud or voter fraud, right? I mean, that's a lie. It's been proven to be a lie. Everybody's comfortable. Everybody who's a serious observer is comfortable saying that's a lie. It's not hyperbole. It's a lie. And so for Cassidy to play that game, you know, when we know at the most central aspect of Trump, his election, that literally the vehicle by which he became president of the United States, he lied about. You know, so it's like the original sin there. Right? You're lying at the heart of the matter. For Cassidy to say that is simply, it's a spin he's developed. It's a way he has figured out how to lie. And that's what Cassidy was doing. He was lying.
How about this one? This is Donald Trump.
Mr. President, Bob, between 1 and 10, how would you grade the White House response so far to the hurricane?
I'd say it was a 10. I give ourselves a 10. We have provided so much, so fast. We were actually there before the storm hit. I would give a 10. I think we did a fantastic job, and we're being given credit. We have done a really great job. And I think our response was better than anyone has ever seen.
How about that? Was that a lie?
That is hyperbole bleeding into a lie. Hyperbole can sometimes be a lie. I will accept that, you know, but again, that I'm still going to give you, that fits within the sort of bizarro world Cassidy definition. There are actual straight on lies.
Right.
You know, and I agree with you that becomes a lie because everyone realizes it's false. But in the end of the game, you don't even have to do that. It's like, we don't have to go to the absurd exaggerations, the false premises. We can go right to the heart of the matter. And this is where the problem comes in. Republicans like Cassidy, who, by the way, was working with Ron Johnson to try and, you know, destroy our healthcare system. Republicans like Cassidy, they have come up with lies for themselves and for the people that somehow in their own hearts and minds justify their service to Donald Trump. And remember, when we talk about Ron Johnson, when we talk about Senator Cassidy, when we talk about these other people, they have made themselves handmaidens or you know, servants to Donald Trump's presidency. They do not choose to serve as elected representatives of the people. They choose to serve Donald Trump.
Here is Joe Scarborough talking with Nicholas Confessori about the future of the Republican Party.
Yesterday was a positive or something that Trump would use. I mean, for me at least, and maybe I'm just too optimistic, I think yesterday showed that Donald Trump and Steve Bannon are clinging to a way of life that was dying 50 years ago, that Donald Trump will always be seen as the death cry of this extremism, this nationalism, this nativism. What did you see when you saw George Bush and Barack Obama and even John Kelly talking about, we are a nation that once valued sacrifice, that once valued women and treated them with respect, that once valued the fallen and their families. How did you take in everything that happened yesterday?
You know, speaking of Bush and Obama, Joe, I actually had a different reaction. I saw two men whose policies were in some sense repudiated by the election of President Trump. And I saw them kind of shouting into the wind. You know, President Bush left office deeply unpopular. He plunged this country into war without end in the Middle East that is still reshaping the world and our country, and a bubble economy that led to a huge crash. And I think that those two things actually gave rise to Donald Trump, set the conditions for him to rise. I think it's Trump's party now. You know, Bush was very forceful in keeping a lid on this kind of nationalism when he was president. In the wake of 9/11, he spoke in a mosque. But I think those forces were always there. I think that Trump has unleashed them, and we can't go back, and I'm not sure that we will go back to a different time anymore.
That's pretty bleak.
Yeah, it's also kind of incoherent, right? You know, with all due respect to him.
By the way, I should Nicholas Conthasori is a writer for the New York Times.
Yeah, and he's a nice guy, and means well, but
you know. Oh, twist.
No, I'm just saying, you know, like, here he is. He's like, the kind of line that gets lost in that spew of words is, George Bush kind of kept a lid on all this. Yeah, that's what you call, I mean, I'm not a fan of Bush, I'm a big critic of Bush, but that's sort of what you call a leader, right? And, you know, if you say, yes, there are these, there's this nationalism out there. Yes, there is xenophobia. Yes, there is racism. True. It's all there. But, boy, isn't it made a little worse when the guy who's the president of the United States, you know, encourages it? Yes, it is. And with all due respect to George Bush, a man who I was, I think it's safe to say we knew each other through the Bush presidency. I wasn't very complimentary toward the fella, right? But to diminish him in the sense of, oh, yeah, it's there's nothing we can do about it. The horse is out of the barn, you know? I mean, come on. Grow up. The fact of the matter is that the Republican Party did move far to the right. Started under Reagan, continued under Bush the son. You know, it's certainly gone further with Trump. That trajectory is true, and it's a horrible trajectory. But to fail to recognize Trump as a distinct figure in that trajectory misses the point of accountability today. And you know what's weird about it? People did the same thing when Bush was president. Bush was not a great president, and people made excuses for him. Now they're making excuses.
Well, you know what's funny? Some of the people that were making excuses for him are now attacking him.
Yeah, I know. Well, but also some of the people who are making excuses for him, or for like a Scott Walker or somebody like that, are now, you know, posing for holy pictures because they're not complimentary of Donald Trump. You know, the way to understand this is that politics is evolutionary. You live in the moment where you're at, and you try to do the right thing at the time, right? So I'm not going to forgive people who failed to criticize Bush when Bush was president. They should have condemned him. He was a bad president. But, you know, the one good thing he did, one of the few good things he did, was keep a lid on hatred and nationalism. And he went out of his way. He used the bully pulpit to oppose it. Donald Trump doesn't do that.
All right.
So why would you, you know, like, oh, I think we've entered this new area. Like, we made a pivot at some point.
Here is...
No, presidents get to choose what they're doing.
Here is Steve Bannon.
Within 24 hours of each other, there were three speeches. President Xi in China, our beloved President George Bush. That's a piece of work. And John McCain. President Bush, to me, embarrassed himself. Speechwriter wrote a highfalutin speech. It's clear he didn't understand anything he was talking about. He equates the Industrial Revolution, the Agricultural Revolution, globalization. He has no earthly idea whether he's coming or going. Just like it was when he was President of the United States. I want to apologize up front to any of the Bush folks outside, in this audience, okay? because there has not been a more destructive presidency than George Bush's. John McCain.
All right. So, and we'll get to John McCain in a minute. How do you see this whole Bannon thing playing out?
You know, you have to, one thing has to be pointed out is that a lot of what Bannon said there was true. Whether you like Bannon or not.
Mm-hmm.
Those critiques were legitimate critiques. They're very, very different than what you heard Confessori saying, right? These were, what Bannon was saying was, you know, these are ideological differences that he has. And I think he's right that some of that did come back to bite. You could hear a Democrat get up and talk about Bill Clinton, different issues, but also say, you know, that was a presidency that really brought, you know, caused a lot of change that wasn't necessarily stuff that people liked. Now, here's the complexity of what's going on with Bannon. And if people were paying attention, they would recognize why this is, A, so incredibly dangerous, but, B, so incredibly attractive to many Republicans. What Bannon is saying is you can cut your ties to the past. You can cut your ties to everything you didn't like about previous Republican presidents and be comfortable in that because it's a new era, right? It's something we've gone through this pivot here. And that actually allows a lot of blame to be placed with everybody but Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Very attractive approach to do it. Now, there are many people who are not Trumplicans, right? Who are not, you know, core Trump people, who are just pure hacks.
Did you call them Trumplicans?
What? Yeah, Trumplicans.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, yeah. That's a Republican who actually believes the whole thing, right? But there are many Republicans who aren't that, who are just pure hacks, you know, like the most scorching hacks you will ever meet. Like Ed Gillespie in Virginia, right? I ask you, could there be a bigger hack than Ed Gillespie? Ever?
But no.
No, I mean, you know,
no.
But right, I mean, this is epic, epic figure. And yet he's running a campaign in Virginia that is being, by all accounts, if the reports are right, you know, aided by Bannon. Bannon's encouraging, you know, like extreme folks to support Gillespie. And where he's like embracing this immigrant, anti-immigrant talk, running ads that make the Willie Horton ads look generous. You know, I mean, this is a hack who's saying, yeah, I'm going for this, right? I'm not going to go for the George Bush, yeah, you know, we really have to treat our brothers and sisters with respect, and we have to not, you know, employ religious hatred and, you know, xenophobia and racism. You know, Gillespie said, no, I'm not going that way. I'm going with the Trump model. I'm going this new way. And so when I say this is very attractive to a lot of Republicans, you know, it's Bannon's giving them something they want, and they will go with it as long as it wins. And so the real heart of this whole discussion that we're having right now goes to November 7th, and I believe that's the day, and that's the Virginia gubernatorial race. If Gillespie wins by embracing Trumpism, right, if he, mm-hmm. you know, as a hack, goes this Trump route and prevails in Virginia, where Democrats have had, you know, obviously pretty good times in the recent decade, they're all going to tell themselves this works. They're going to believe this is the model.
One more clip for you.
One aspect of the conflict, by the way, that I will never, ever countenance is that we drafted the lowest income level of America and the highest income level found a doctor that would say that they had a bone spur. That is wrong. That is wrong.
Nothing like going out swinging.
Went there. All I would say is he went there, right? He went to the heart of the matter. And here's the problem or the challenge with this. What John McCain said there was legitimate. It was true. And he should have done it in 2015. He did. John McCain in 2015 made the John Kerry mistake of 2004. When Donald Trump attacked John McCain for John McCain's greatest accomplishment, this is the model, and it isn't Steve Bannon that thought of this. This is Karl Rove stuff, right? You attack your opponent's strength, not their weakness, because you want to take their strength down. They attack Kerry for his Vietnam. Trump did that to McCain. In the case of Kerry in 2004, he didn't believe that anyone would take it seriously. He didn't respond. It became ultimately very damaging to him. In 2015, when Trump went after McCain and said, you know, the whole thing about, you know, I like people that don't get captured, all that, McCain should have engaged. He did not engage because he thought it was so absurd. And a lot of other people thought it was so absurd. They were aghast at Trump, but they didn't challenge Trump. They didn't step up and say, you know, here are the facts about you, sir. And so McCain finally got there, but it's the cavalry arriving late. And so we ought to respect what McCain said. It's appropriate. It was well said. But boy, would it have been more effective and meaningful if he had said it exactly 2 years earlier.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to Sly's office, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.